Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is loading. SteveJonesShow.com audio is sponsored by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call them at 800-609-9484 or visit them online at REWfinancial.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Steve Jones and Buhner.
You know, Kevin's getting ready for tomorrow night's big game. The Seals of Selins Grove invade Chickalimmie, I think.
52nd meeting, I believe, if my numbers are correct.
And I'll be safely ensconced at Ironman Stadium watching the Danville Ironman host the Shamokin Indians. But I'll have my headset on so I can tune WKOK. And I'm very much interested in hearing how Selins Grove and Chickalimmie makes out tomorrow night. I get to hear it's not that I don't hear Kevin in my at night in my ears because I listen to him all day long.
I was going to say, please finish that.
Yes. I just keep hearing his voice, but I'll hear it while tomorrow night as well.
I have a headache.
I know.
Wow. 52nd meeting between the two, huh?
It's the battle of the Susquehanna, and teams have to cross that bridge one way or the other.
I love it.
It's a real rivalry game. There's no question. But I think last year, Kevin, was there not an incident or two or three or ten?
Yeah, there was a lot of emotion in that game. It was right after one Chickalimmie student was killed in an accident the week prior. So that moved that game to Monday. And, you know, emotions were running a little bit high, and there was a slight altercation in that game.
I think the coaches on both teams should have been commended. I think they were because they got it under control rather quickly. But my point is that I think that has not been forgotten among at least players because they're kids. They're 16, 17 years old. So we'll see what transpires Friday night.
You know, I didn't see it carry over into the basketball season, which was really good. And I'm not aware of any of the issues through all the other fall sports last year, too, which is another good thing. It shows that the coaches involved and you know, the team leadership in general of all the teams got involved in it and made it not become more of an issue. So that was really well done.
Yeah. Well, Todd Tilford, Dave Hess, two of the great coaches in high school football in the region, no doubt about it.
Yeah. Good. So the 52nd meeting between the two, and I know Kevin draws on history all the time in these things. Yeah.
Let's see. I want to say 27-25. Chickalimmie leads the series. I have to look that up again. I don't have that number on my head.
And how many in a row for one team?
I think it's only two in a row for Selins Grove.
Okay.
And I can tell you, Danville and Shamokin have played at least 50 times, if not more. That's right. A big rivalry goes back a long time. And we have a lot of those things. Another big rivalry game that has come to the fore in this region is Mount Carmel and Southern Columbia. Mount Carmel, the all-time winningest program, Southern 6 or 7 state championships. They are like 5-6 miles apart. The schools are contiguous. Right. The kids know each other. Everybody seems to work at Knoebels in the summertime, both undefeated.
This is what State College is missing dramatically compared to the rivalries you just talked about. State College used to play Altoona, Hollidaysburg, Central Mountain, Williamsport, Dubois, Indiana, Punxsutawney, and Cedar Cliff was actually the long trip for them.
Mm-hmm.
Lewistown,
sure.
They would play. Well, now, as a Quad A school, they're playing Martinsburg, West Virginia, coming up.
Boy, the rivalry is there, isn't it? That ought to get the blood boiling.
Right. And Martinsburg's three-time West Virginia state champion. I mean, they obviously have a very good program. But you miss out on that. I mean, to me, the rivalry part, Shamokin's going to play Danville. for people in the town and so forth, it's a big deal. Now, for the kids, yeah, there's a rivalry as well. But, you know, I mean, the turnover in talents every 2 years in high school. I mean, there's a you have to be realistic. Hey, they're beating them 8 straight times. The kids of the team are going, yeah, the two times I played, okay, fine. Or the one time I played, okay, fine. I think as reporters, you know, as broadcasters, they have won 8 straight. You're like, oh, hey, the kids of the team weren't here for all 8. It's irrelevant, okay?
Exactly.
Because it is irrelevant. And you know, and so we make a big deal out of such things. But for the people in town, it's very relevant. They've beaten us 8 straight times. You've got to defeat these people.
Right.
So that part for the fans is irrelevant. For the players, it's totally irrelevant because they weren't here for the other 6. But, you know, but those rivalries are important. And we are so we're inching our way away from things like that. And, of course, we've talked about it in college. Penn State doesn't play Pitt. Yeah, that'll be coming up. You know, the Eastern rivalries, you know, they had Syracuse this year. They're not going to have them for 7 more years. They haven't played West Virginia since 1992. They're going to play Rutgers again because they're coming into the conference. They're going to play Maryland again because they're coming into the conference. And you lose those rivalries. And that's something that I think people, I mean, State College should not be playing Martinsburg, West Virginia. They shouldn't be playing them. They should be playing Altoona. They should be playing Williamsport. I don't care if they're a different classification now. They should still be playing them because that is the school that is closest to you. And somebody said, well, Williamsport's down. I don't care. They should still be playing. It's a traditional game, and I think you have to keep your traditions alive. 52nd meeting, Shikellamy-Sealands Grove. They should be playing every year, and I think that's great that they do.
And, you know, right. What happens is a lot of the parents or a lot of people from Sealands Grove work with a lot of people from Sunbury. There's a little bit
sure.
of sidebar discussions. Let me tell you, I know who State College's big rival used to be because I saw the game played on 2 occasions was State College Belfont, the so-called kettle game.
Yeah, it was.
Ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it was, and the irony is that they started ending that series, and when they did, ironically, with Larry Johnson as a senior tailback, Belfont finally won the game.
I dated a girl from State College High School back in my youth, and I went to the kettle game, and I was there the night before when various and sundry youth from the State College area took barricades that they found somewhere in State College Borough over to Belfont and barricaded all the streets leading to the high school, just sort of, shall we say, a youthful prank. Mm-hmm. And everybody kind of loved it because that was expected. State College kids expected to do something to Belfont of a harmless nature and vice versa. And, of course, at the end of the game, the teams came out, the kettle got exchanged, and, you know, you waited another year to play that game.
And the Seals Go broadcaster always eggs Kevin's house before the big game. So
exactly.
It's really cool.
Yeah, Pat and I do discuss things before the game, usually in the booth there. I want to clarify one thing. Okay. It is 26-25, Sealands Grove leading the series.
Ooh, so
now it was dominated by Shikellamy early on.
Yes.
Then Sealands Grove dominated in the 90s and early 2000s. And it has been a rather balanced series here in the last few years, back and forth.
And we have those great rivalries up and down the Susquehanna Valley.
Well, you got another good game coming up this week, and that's Southern Columbia-Mount Carmel.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a big rivalry there.
Yeah, Bob talked about that.
I mean, they've only played, 17 times, but it's turned into a really good rivalry.
Oh, it's a knock 'em out. You know, and one of the things that happens, of course, is that the folks in Mount Carmel claim that somehow some of the Mount Carmel kids end up playing for Southern. A guy named Hynoski, for example, whose dad played for the Red Tornadoes. And, you know, there's a lot of pride over in Mount Carmel. They are Pennsylvania's all-time winningest high school football program, and they won't let you forget it. Southern then comes back with other things. So,
well, that's okay. It's only a rivalry if both teams can win.
Yes.
I mean, it's the only way it's a rivalry. If you're like, hey, we're a rival, and you've beaten them 30 straight times, that's no rivalry. That's just another mark on your schedule. All right. I had a quick chance, just a couple minutes, to talk to Corey Geiger of the Altoona Mirror about the SI story at Oklahoma State. Corey, what are some things that you've, at least when you've looked at it, what you've found out?
One of the investigative reporters in this piece apparently the way they went about their investigation was some unusual lines of questions, no note-taking, no recorders. Well, here's the thing, Steve. If you're directly quoting people and you're 100% not taking notes and you're not using a recorder, then I'll flat out tell you that those quotes are lies, because there's no way you can directly quote someone 100% accurately unless you're taking diligent notes or you're recording it. You just can't, you can't memorize volumes and volumes of information. And so now, I don't want that about the message to get lost in the means of how they got the information, but that is a big part here, because apparently, especially from what I've read, the Thayer Evans part of the investigation, the line of questioning with some of these guys, they're all claiming that the quotes were taken out of context. And if I say together, you know, at the beginning of an interview, I love Steve Jones, and then I say at the end of the interview, Steve Jones, you know, is a good broadcaster, and you put those together, I love Steve Jones, he is a good broadcaster, well, then right. You are being dishonest with the reader, because that is not directly the way the quote came out.
See, and that's what I find interesting about this. That's why I think it's important to step back. Now, this is a five-part series, though, Corey. They've invested a lot of their reputation in putting this out there, don't you think?
Oh, no doubt about it. And Sports Illustrated is one of the great journalism entities in this country. And again, when people do this type of work, and I've never been an investigative reporter to this scale. I mean, we were all doing some investigation during what happened with Penn State. And, you know, and if the plot goes into this type of work, you find out information that you can't necessarily confirm. You find out information very high and confirm, but you can't get a second source on it. So there's nothing more difficult than investigative journalism. And I hold investigative journalists in very esteem the work, because they're doing very, very difficult work. But when you do this kind of work and you leave questions with concern, then that's where the end result that you come up with, it's going to be held up to ridicule, because if your process in acquiring the information is in question, well, then why are we to believe you that the information that you acquired is true?
Corey, always a pleasure. What do you have coming up? That was Corey Geiger. I had a chance to talk to him briefly this afternoon about all this earlier. And he brings up, I think, some interesting points. And it kind of blows Kevin out of the water, because Kevin wanted good talk show fodder. And then all of a sudden you find out maybe not all the quotes are true.
Well, he has a point, though, that if you don't have a record of it, that it's really difficult to quote somebody and make it a quote. I mean, that takes a really good memory if you don't have any sort of notes. Now, my question is, and I missed it if he did talk about it, Steve. Obviously, there's no taped recording of it or digital recording of it. Was there any handwritten notes involved?
Didn't seem to be, based on what he was saying.
You know, one of the...
Didn't seem to be, and I think that's a huge problem.
Absolutely is a problem.
One of the prime things I stressed in law enforcement in my days working there is, if you didn't write it down contemporaneously, it never happened. So if you're interviewing someone, you put name, date, time, place, and then you write verbatim what they said. And if you don't do that, then it never happened.
Here's my issue. It's 2013. Anybody can go back to any show that we do, and we have an archive of it, and they can call it up anytime they want, correct?
Absolutely.
Yes. Right? Good, bad, or indifferent.
Okay. When I do the pregame show with Bill O'Brien, it'll be taped tonight after the show. You'll hear it on Saturday. But it's not me... Oh, it's time now for the Bill O'Brien show presented by Chesapeake Energy. I talked to Bill. You know, Bill told me da-da-da-da-da-da and da-da-da-da-da-da. No, I can't do that. You have to go out there and you have to actually hear his voice on the show with his own quotes. And to paraphrase, especially in a five-part series, that's a lot of information to disseminate in a five-part series, a lot of words being thrown into a computer. So it's not just built around, I have three key quotes, I put them in there, I memorized them, and now I wrote a story. There are quotes all over this in a five-part series on five different areas of investigation. So now you get concerned about the validity of what you're reading. And I'm not here to defend Oklahoma State. They may be guilty as all, may be completely guilty. And if they are, then the proper penalty should go against the individuals that are involved, that were allegedly involved in this. But when you start playing fast and loose with quotes to fit an agenda, now you now come under scrutiny as to whether it's right or wrong. And if I'm Oklahoma State, you know, the first thing I do is the AD that Mike Gundy and I have a long talk, because this goes back, Mike Gundy goes back to when Les Miles was there too. And I said, look, you tell me, what do you know, what you don't? If he convinces me in a closed door meeting that this is not right, it's all wrong. If he convinces me and I walk out of there and say, you know what, Mike's adamant about this, and you know what, I believe him, then you go to the wall for him. Yeah, you put your own reputation on the line by doing that, but at the same time, a lot of reputations are on the line here. The AD's reputation's on the line. Gundy's reputation's on the line. The reputation of Les Miles is on the line. And also the reputation of Sports Illustrated's on the line, too. So there's a lot riding on the accuracy of this report. And when you're talking about a report that can bring a program down, accuracy had better be the number one component.
Yeah, because we all know that inaccurate reports can do some incredible long-standing damage, and only later on in the calmness of the future, of looking forward, can you actually see the truth of everything, and it can harm people. There's no question. We've seen it in this area.
And yeah, exactly right. And the other part, too, is that you really can't put together a complete report unless you get both sides of the story and have quotes on both sides. And if you have quotes on both sides, then at least it gives the reader a better rounded opinion as to what happened. It may confuse the issue, it may muddle it just a bit for you, but at least you have both sides. And you cannot pass judgment unless you have two sides to a story. That's where it comes back to what I've talked about the entire time. Two critical words: truth, fairness. Cannot have fairness without truth. Can't have truth without evaluating two sides of it. Can't.
Well, this will be a story that'll be with us, obviously, for a while. And the sad part of it is, in one sense, it takes away from enjoying a Saturday afternoon watching two teams like a Central Florida Penn State or a LSU team or Alabama Texas A&M. That's the fun part. And
sure.
And this becomes the sideshow becomes the main show. And it just detracts from what brings a lot of enjoyment to literally millions and millions of people watching high school and college kids playing a sport for just the enjoyment of it.
Do I believe that most programs actually do try to be clean? Actually, I do believe that. Right? There's, you know, you may have problems with ancillary deals dealing with college football, college basketball. I mean, nobody cheats in field hockey. I mean, you know, I mean, okay, but college football and men's basketball. All right. At the same time, the vast majority, I mean, and John Bacon wrote in his book, and he's absolutely right about this, Joe Paterno created a culture here in State College where the people of State College had a fear of breaking a rule. And conversely, the players knew. In other words, Pete Massaro could not go into a Starbucks, for example, and say, I'd like a latte and expect it for free, because the barista at Starbucks knew that he could not do that and give that to him, because that's the culture that was created here. John Bacon wrote about that in his book. I mean, John Bacon's book has certainly had a lot of sensational parts to it, talking about the internal workings, keeping the team together, what Motti and Zordich did, what Bill O'Brien did. But he also spends time talking about the culture that was created by Joe Paterno in State College, where if Pete Massaro went to a Starbucks, he absolutely did not expect that drink for free. And it was offered to him for free. He knew he had to say no. Conversely, the barista at Starbucks knew darn well, I am no way am I offering that for free. And if he asked for it for free, he's not getting it for free. That's the culture that was created here. And John noticed that and wrote about that. And that's something that needs to be discussed more extensively about the culture here. And has to be pointed out to everybody. That is how it has been here for a long time. And what's really great about that is that despite all the outside sniping about this place, because, again, that pack mentality, which doesn't take intelligence to be in the pack, right, is that that culture still exists here. Bill has picked up where Joe left off in terms of making sure that is reinforced. The players understand that completely. They know they can't go into a Starbucks and expect a latte, and the person at the Starbucks is never going to offer them one for free either. I mean, that's the culture that's in place here now. Well, okay? This is not the run out to the tarmac. Oh, there's the new coach. Goody. This is not the culture that's here. And people, I want to tell you guys right now, if you love Penn State and you're involved in Penn State, you need to fight it all the time. Don't let some circus clown who is uninformed tell you what your culture is. And ever.
They just came out with some international and national ratings of colleges and universities. And lo and behold, I believe Penn State was in the top. I think they were ranked 8th in the country for being a major in terms of ranking as a major comprehensive university. And when you consider how many hundreds of colleges and universities there are here in the U.S. and then around the world, to be 8th is pretty darn amazing.
Yeah. No, it's remarkable. It's remarkable what they've done. There's a lot of great things here that are going on here. And we have to understand that all the great things that are going on here, and we have to fight for them.
Yeah.
You have to fight for them. You can't get in the field position. You got to fight for them. And, we understand what happened here in the end, okay? We understand what happened here, and there's going to be some trials next year. And let's let those trials play out and find out what the truth is from those trials before we make final judgment. But I can tell you right now what the fundamental culture is here, and any university town in this country would love to have that built-in culture that is here already. Any university president would love to have an autonomous athletic department that pays for itself and doesn't draw from the state and draw from the university. Okay, they would love to have that kind of culture. There's so many positive culture things here, and we have to start telling everybody what it is and stop taking shots.
Amen.
All right? I mean, it's our responsibility to tell our story. Okay? It's our responsibility to tell our story. And we have to now do a much better job of telling our story and stop apologizing, okay, all the time. There are certain things along the way that are important. We never have to forget, ever, ever forget, okay, the victims come first and what their needs are. But there are, okay, after that very important part, okay, after that extremely important part, there are other layers to this as well. And you can't look at the other layers and say, I'm sorry, they're totally unimportant compared to, no, if your priorities are straight, you make sure that the victims are taken care of and that you take steps so it never happens again. But at the same time, you also have to say, what are the strengths of our culture? And you have to promote the strengths of that culture. Because guess what? Okay? As awful as those incidents happen to be, there's also a lot of great things going on here, and it's our job to tell that story.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us today. Show brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Give Rick a call at 800-609-9484 or go online to rewfinancial.com. It's important in these times that You trust somebody who has a great feel for the landscape? I can tell you right now, Rick has a great feel for the landscape. And I want to say hi to Rick and Lee, and always great to talk about them and all the great things that they do. And also in the Sunbury Motor Studio, a.k.a. The Chateau, nicknamed by Jack Cam personally. And Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Roads, 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Thunderstorms around the area rolling through the valley. Keep that in mind.
It's always great to be up here on top of the hill, surrounded by tall antennas. And when there's lightning around, it just sort of lights up the area, so to speak.
And I always love when, like, in those important times, Roger always tells Kevin to go outside and kind of adjust the antenna and just move it a little bit. I mean, I don't quite understand that.
Well, that Roger, you know, he's a pretty smart fella. Hey, one thing I wanted to talk about, if I could.
No.
Okay, fair enough. We'll move right on to Kevin.
All right, thanks a lot for being a part of the program today.
There could be a real record-breaking event occur this Saturday involving Franklin Quiete from Bloomsburg University.
Right.
Franklin started last week in the home opener for the Huskies against Stonehill out of Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
Played roughly about a half a game, gained 180 yards, which for him is about average. He's about 180 yards away from becoming the all-time leading rusher in the Pennsylvania State Athletic Conference. He'll be well over 7,000 yards in a career that still has, at least after Saturday, 9 more games to go, not including playoffs.
Wow.
And
it's amazing.
He was hoping to set the record against East Stroudsburg University because he grew up in the Pocono Mountain area, very close to East Stroudsburg, and they never recruited him. And he has made them pay the last 3 seasons. I can't imagine what he wants to do in terms of running for yardage against them this year. But he will go ahead of two other Bloomsburg University players, Jamar Brittingham, who came to Bloomsburg after a stint at a prep school. He was on his way to Rutgers when a guy named Ray Rice got recruited by the new coaching staff at Rutgers, and they let Jamar go away. He comes to Bloomsburg, and he held the record. And then a guy by the name of Irv Sigler, who won the Harlan Hill Award and led the conference in rushing about a dozen years ago. A phenomenal and gifted athlete. But Franklin Quiete has a chance at Edinburgh on Saturday, if he has a typical game, to be number one in the conference. And probably, I think, 1 year he led all divisions in rushing, I think his freshman year. So good milestone for Paul Darrow, the interim coach who replaced Danny Hale. Got his first win. He's undefeated right now. I think that'll change over the course of a tough season, but he's 1-0 and on his way.
Well, rant on.
I don't have anything today.
Oh,
I am rantless for the first time in the history of the program.
What a letdown.
Such a disappointment. Look, well, all right. Today's show is brought to you by REW Financial. Our good friend Rick Weibel, 800-609-9484. You can go to rewfinancial.com. These times you need to have somebody you trust with your money that just is smart with it. Yeah, Rick's the guy. No doubt about it. And I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 14. 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look, I've gone through my series of rants today. You know, Buhner's been nice about most everything, and you've been sitting there in your cubicle, and we don't even know what you're doing.
It's a calm day for me.
I think he's working up for one for tomorrow.
It's a calm day for me.
Gee.
Nothing's really annoying me today. I'm rather calm.
Did you notice there's one word that didn't come out of Kevin's mouth today in the entire 1 hour and 45 minutes of the show? There's one word that he has not spoken. Steelers.
And I don't think it's going to be happening.
Apparently, the Steelers are no longer the toast of the Steel City.
Well, the Pirates right now own the city, and then they go into Texas, and they win three games.
Oh boy, did they ever
in a row! And that's impressive because here's Texas in the thick of the race in the American League West with the A's. Texas is at home. Texas needs these games. Texas goes out and they try to set the tone in game one with Yu Darvish. And Yu Darvish, by the way, pitched really, really well. But he got outpitched by Gerrit Cole, who beat him.
1-0.
Beat him 1-0. They ended up sweeping the series. The Pirates, whom I don't think have won 8 games on the road in interleague play combined ever, are 8-1 on the road in interleague play.
They have a stellar record interleague. The funniest thing last night in the final game, the getaway game yesterday afternoon in Texas. A.J. Burnett is on the mound.
Oh, this is the Barmas thing.
Oh, did he? And what happened is the coaching staff from the dugout motioned Barmas to move one way, and he did, following the coach's instructions. And apparently A.J. Burnett didn't see it, and he threw the pitch, and the ball was a ground ball right where Barmas should have been, according to A.J. Burnett. And the looks that Burnett gave to Barmas and the coaches, Right. Oh, they were daggers. Oh, was he really upset? Because had he been in the same – Barmas been in the position, it was a double play ball, would have gotten out of the inning. As it was, he gave up four earned runs,
right.
But yet the Pirates came away with the win. But that is the kind of competitor, and you can tell in that – Pirates dugout, he is the boss. There's no doubt about it.
But you have to be in the right situation because this is the same guy who in New York was in the fetal position.
Absolutely.
All right? Okay? When he's been in Toronto or Miami or in Pittsburgh, he's had a swagger to him. He got to New York and they ate him up.
Yeah.
As simple as that. And, I mean, he was the guy in the postseason where he went out the mound, you looked around and said, good. Okay, glad to see you.
Can't wait.
He didn't yell at his shortstop before. All right, you want to know why? Because that guy was called Derek Jeter. Okay, and Jeter could get to all these balls that Barmas can't, and Jeter knew how to position himself and didn't need help from his pitcher.
Yeah.
All right, it's a little bit different. Barmas, certainly, I give him credit for being in the major leagues, but, I mean, it is a weakness on this club.
But, you know, he made up for it. Barmas did because later on he did hit a home run.
Right.
To sort of say, okay, sorry, AJ, you know, hope you forgive me. I'll hit a home run, get another run on the board and win 7-5.
Yeah.
But, you know, that Pirates team with the addition of Morneau, the addition of Bird, they've got some, the concerns a Pirates fan had was, do we have too many leaders, too many chiefs in the dugout?
So, no.
And they don't.
You can't have that. No. I don't think that. I think it's impossible to have that. The only time you have a problem with that is, for example, if they butt heads against one another. But if they're all unified with the same purpose, you can't have enough leaders. And I think that's fine. I know the thunderstorms are rolling through the area right now, aren't they? I think it's raining hard, isn't it?
Roger,
off and on.
Yeah. Roger's sending Kevin out again to check on the top of the antennas here on the top of the hill.
I have a rant if I didn't miss my opportunity because I did find
time to
something.
Take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment. What? Why? What's your rant?
Well, it's a rant that I had about a year ago. Well, actually, less than a year ago.
Why don't you just re-rack the tape?
Because it's slightly different. Because now they're voting again for the NFL Hall of Fame. So who do I think should be in the Hall of Fame, Steve, that isn't in there right now?
Terry Hanratty?
No. The Bus.
Frenchie Fuqua?
The Bus. Jerome Bettis. Why isn't Jerome Bettis in the Hall of Fame at this point? There's one reason.
Kent Nix.
He didn't average 4 yards a play, or 4 yards a carry.
Bill Nelson?
No. Now, 4 yards a carry. Do you know how many yards he is away from averaging 4 yards a carry for his career? 254 yards. 254 yards is the main reason why he's not in the Hall of Fame at this moment. That's ridiculous. The guy fumbled. The guy lost 41 career fumbles. That's a fumble every 85 times. If the average running back in the NFL carries the ball even 25 times, He's not going to fumble for four games.
Who are the other candidates?
Who cares? That's not the point.
I care because
that's
you're only allowed.
Not the point.
You're only allowed seven in. If somebody's more deserving should be in, that's among the seven. I can't put him in.
Emmitt Smith had a better has a worse fumble rate than that, and he's in. Walter Payton had a worse fumble rate. He's in. Dickerson, what? Sanders, John Riggins. Let's look at John Riggins. All right, Bettis had 15,111 yards from scrimmage. That ranks him 19th. That's almost 1,700 more than Riggins, who was inducted back in 1992. So why isn't Jerome Bettis in the Hall of Fame?
Question for Steve.
Because, I mean, I'd like to know what he did in the postseason. I would like to know.
They won a Super Bowl.
It's not the postseason.
Yes, it is. That's a huge determining. Kevin,
I understand what you're saying, but it's wrong.
Okay, it's not wrong. When I'm trying to determine and split hairs as to who should be in and who isn't, I want to know what the dude did when the money was on the table.
When the
stakes were the highest. I want to know, because you know what? We talked about power pitchers versus pitchers to contact. You want to know why that's significant in postseason play? You want to know why? Because pitchers who pitch to contact in postseason play struggle. And you know why? Because guess what? In the postseason, you're facing the better lineups, the better teams. They got there because they are a better lineup. In the postseason in football, you're playing the better defenses, the better teams. Because guess what? During the course of the year, they proved that they were better. You can gain thousands of yards against Jacksonville all you want. I want to know when the money's on the table and the stakes are the highest, what are you doing?
145 yards.
When you're trying to split hairs on guys, that's one of the areas you have to split hairs on as to who I'm going to vote for and who I'm not.
Rushing stats in 96 in the playoffs, in the postseason, in two games, 145 yards, just about 4 yards a carry. 97, 172 yards in two games, averaging 3.5 yards a carry.
Well, just add it all up for me. What's he got?
I don't know. Get a calculator out.
Just add it up. What's he got?
The guy only played. You take out 95. Let's see. Five, six. You're basing it on 9 games. If you take out 05, you're going to base his. You're going to base whether he should be in the Hall of Fame or not on 9 games.
If it is up against somebody else that is deserving, I need to see those numbers as to what they're doing, what their performance level was when the money was on the table. I think Ken Stabler should be in the Hall of Fame because Ken Stabler was magnificent in big games. All right? I mean, they're called big games for a reason. If he's out there stumbling and bumbling at 40 yards and they lose another AFC championship game, well, I'm sorry. That doesn't light me up. That doesn't impress me. And how many AFC championship games did they lose in the bus's career? A lot.
Do current members of the Hall of Fame have a vote?
No, they do not. The vote is done by a 40-member panel.
Okay.
And it's made up of media people from each city in the NFL and includes cities that are no longer in the NFL.
Like Los Angeles, for example.
Right, exactly, because they can vote on old-timers and so forth.
Guy played 192 games, and we base whether they should be in the Hall on 5. Potentially.
No. That's how you split hairs when you're looking at guys that are in the relative neighborhood of one another. I want to know at that point, when the money was on the table, which one performed and which one didn't, if it's down to one guy or the other. That's one of the determining factors when it's down to one guy or the other. If you can't see that, then you shouldn't be on this show.
Now, I understand. I'm not saying that the guys that I mentioned earlier didn't belong in the Hall of Fame. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just comparing his stats to those guys.
And I tell you right now, if you gave me a choice of those guys, I would pick Barry Sanders over him. I would want Eric Dickerson to be my running back. I would want Walter Payton to be my running back. I mean, all these guys are a long list of guys.
I'd want Walter Payton to be my running back, too.
I'd pick Barry Sanders over him. I would pick Emmitt Smith over him. I mean, you know.
Emmitt Smith, I'd agree with.
This is a workman-like workhorse. I'd pick John Riggins over him.
I'd have to look at Riggins' numbers in the regular year. I know he had some great numbers in the playoffs.
He had great numbers in the regular year, too. It's just now the hole in his resume is what he did with the Jets. because people forget about the fact that he was with the New York Jets before his career took off with the Redskins. All right, we need to take one more break. We'll do that. We'll again re-educate Kevin on the importance of money on the table in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Kevin actually believes that Otis Anderson's Super Bowl MVP is better than Jerome Bettis.
I did not. No. No, I did not say that. I was just looking at the running backs. The running backs that are up, Otis Anderson, Tiki Barber, Jerome Bettis, Larry Centers, Roger Craig, Stephen Davis, Terrell Davis, Eddie George, Priest Holmes, Dave Meggett, Eric Metcalf, Herschel Walker, and Ricky Waters. The only guy that I think rates higher than Jerome Bettis on just the running backs list is Roger Craig.
You have a Bettis jersey, don't you?
No, I never had a Bettis jersey.
Like he signed it for you?
No. I do not have a financial stake in this.
He has a $50 autographed T-shirt from Jerome.
I only paid $25 for it. No, I do not have anything collectible of Jerome Bettis that would be worth more money if he was in the Hall of Fame.
Wow.
Actually, that's not true. I do have some things, but not for that. I don't have them for that reason.
And Steve, you're getting ready tonight for a little action.
Yeah. In fact, we are. We're going to have a little Irish eyes are smiling tonight. One of the members of the Crow Park contingent is going to be on the show tonight. We're going to talk about that game coming up next year. Then Bill O'Brien will have a series of questions for him. I know when Dan Rooney is here. You know those questions you sent me about the Steelers, Kevin?
Yeah, ask him if he thinks Jerome Bettis should be in the Hall of Fame.
Seriously, what you sent me, I've never in my life felt like I was reading a dossier before. I mean, you can't have that many questions.
There are a lot of questions. I'm not sure anybody has the answers, including Mike Tomlin.
So you think Jerome Bettis should be in the Hall of Fame?
There's no question. And Kevin Green's another guy. I don't think he should be in the Hall of Fame, and I was surprised he made the ballot last year in 13.
Kevin Green.
What did I just say? I don't think he belongs there. I was surprised he was on the ballot in 13.
Kevin Green?
You.
I like him, but I don't think he belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Kevin Green? Boy, if the heart wasn't on the sleeve at that point.
You didn't hear a word I said, did you?
Wow. I've done this for 2 years. I mean.
Like talking to my kid.
Oh, God. It is like talking to your
kid. This is State Representative Fred Keller. Congratulations, News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury, on 80 years of service to the Central Susquehanna Valley.